Daisy was not crazy. At least not like they said. She wasn't unstable or paranoid. She wasn't dissociative or delusional, nor did she ever display homicidal tendencies. She didn't impose some means of self-mutilation or harbor a borderline personality. She did not require restraints or group therapy, and she never intended harm. She took her meds and she was fine. She was not crazy. The day she died, that cold gray day when I withdrew into myself, that day I cleaned the house from top to bottom, wiped down every wall, emptied every trash can, and discarded most of my clothes. That day when I scrubbed and mopped and threw away the things of no matter, closed the curtains in the front room, unplugged all the clocks and disconnected my phone, put on my grandmother's only black suit, changed the sheets, and lay down on the bed, I was the one who was crazy. I was the one who should have caused everyone worry. I was the one who should have been locked up and tended to. I was the one who should have been restrained and drugged and analyzed. Because unlike my beautiful and gentle sister, I meant harm to everything alive and breathing. I meant harm to my colleagues and to my neighbors, to the doctor who could not bring himself to say she was dead, but rather mumbled to me about some deleterious psychosis and charted in his notes the date and time that she expired. I meant harm to the chaplain who spoke of death as if it were merely waking up from a troublesome night of sleep, the librarian who wanted to fill my arms with books about grief and loss, the church lady who left loaves of bread and tins of cookies at my door, the mailman who kept bringing bills and cards and form letters from magazines for trial subscriptions, the children laughing as they passed by on the street, the birds that would not stop singing, the nurse who called to tell me I left my coat in the waiting room, and all the people watching as I entered and exited her room without saying a single word, shedding a single tear, asking a single question. I hated them all, and I meant harm to every one of them. But of course they never knew they were in danger. They never perceived that I could manage such evil, was capable of such heinous, horrible desires. They never asked. And if they had, they would have discovered that the harm I meant for everyone else was secondary to the harm I meant for myself. Mostly, I just wanted to die with Daisy. I wanted to be done with this life of come-and-go mothers and missing fathers. I wanted out of this homeless existence. I wanted to be dead just like my sister. And for a long time, I was. It was just that no one knew. I took a leave of absence from law school, stayed in bed, ate only what was left in kitchen cabinets and at the door of my apartment. I was crazy. I was broken. I was dead. And then, one day, I wasn't. It took months, and it took grace, and it took some unexpected slight shift of sadness that slipped just enough, just barely enough to make room for beauty. And once it happened, once I saw it happen, I got up from bed, and I went out to the corner market for milk and chocolate bars, and I decided to live. Now I am alive and breathing, and mostly back together, damaged, but still strong in the broken places, as Hemingway would say. When people first asked me about my business venture, about why I do what I do, how I switched from being a student of law to a florist, I used to shake my head, look around at where I was standing, where they were asking, and I would say, "The flowers saved me."